Today I'm joined by Jan and Simon of Autumn Live, who co-founded this report with us.
There's something about bringing people together, isn't there, like in a room like that and talking about something that everyone's passionate about, and it just felt like people were really cheering it on almost.
The key thing, which we all know, is that you cannot replace in-person connection. Mm. We've done really well with webinars and our Zoom conferences. You know, from just sitting here with us in person, looking us in the eye, smiling at us, connecting with us, you know how much value that brings, much more so than doing it online.
But there is a risk, and I think this has happened in the pandemic, of people going, yeah, I know how Zoom or Teams or whatever works. Great, we'll just whack it on that. As you said, the bar's so low. Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of talks we've done with people where they're literally sat there in some awful room with a laptop looking
not
up there.
Not this one.
No, not this one.
Thank you for coming in to chat about the report. Thank you for being involved in it. I really appreciate it. Hello and welcome to the Digital Community Leaders podcast, where we chat with community managers, champions and founders about their experiences leading and supporting digital communities. My name's Pete Heslop and I lead the team here at Steadfast Collective, and we exist to craft digital applications that bring people together. We created the Digital Community Leaders podcast to be a bite-sized look into what it takes to start, grow and scale digital communities. Today I'm joined by the co-champions of this report, Jan and Simon of Autumn Live, who co-founded this report with us. So hello, lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Great to have you. So last week we ran the event where we launched the report. It went really well. Any thoughts on the event?
Well, there's something about bringing people together, isn't there, like in a room like that and talking about something that everyone's passionate about, and it just felt like people were really like cheering it on almost from the responses, from the questions that people asked from the floor, from the amount of nodding heads. Just people were behind this concept big time, and that's exciting to be part of.
Mm. What I really loved about it is the amount of experts in the room, not just the panel. Obviously, the people in the audience were experts about their communities as well, but there was still stuff for them to take away and learn from the report. Mm. And I don't think I've had any negative feedback. Literally every person who's looked at it has gone, you've got the data and you've got the expert insights, which I think is absolutely priceless and makes it really quite unique.
Yeah, the calibre of the people in the room was exceptional. What I also think when we were planning the report that we did well, not to toot our own trumpets, was we also prioritised it needs to look good, because we could have, you know, made this essentially an academic study and it would have landed in people's inboxes. They would have opened it once and gone, ah. But this is actually something you want to keep opening, because it looks so engaging to kind of navigate
it's
around.
It's super readable and really easy to digest the data as well, which I've done a few times since it was printed last week. As you can see, I've got my little notes on the side where I find my little points that I need to go to.
Fab. So you both run Autumn Live. So tell me a little bit about what Autumn Live is and what Autumn Live does and why you're so invested in the concept of community.
So we're an events agency, and we like to think that we bring people together for meaningful connection. That's kind of our key focus, really. Events are about people before they're about logistics and everything else. And we do that in a variety of ways, whether it's online, large conferences or webinars, whether it's hybrid, audience in the room, audience online, or if it's face-to-face. And for us, they're all different formats, but the core of it, it's about bringing people together in a way that enables connection. So that's kind of what we do, and that's where we come from, and we always have that kind of element of thinking about comms and the other things around it to enable the people to get the most out of it. And so that kind of people focus enables us to really see the value in communities and, you know, this blend of online and face-to-face, that people want to champion a cause or get involved in something or love a particular brand, but they need to connect together rather than just being sat on someone's database receiving a newsletter. Mm. It's that broader and that way of actually enabling people to get behind something and do something and get to know each other as well as the organisation that are behind it.
And in the last few years, especially since the pandemic has moved stuff to hybrid and whatnot, have you seen a big shift from your events being about we're receiving an audience to actually this is a collective of people who want to be part of something more together? Because it is quite a big shift going from we have an audience, whether it's an email newsletter or you're sat at the theatre, to actually to something that we're involved with and kind of pushing it forward. Like your TEDx event is a good example of that. You very much encourage people to be involved in like making it what it is rather than just sitting there and consuming.
Yeah, and the connection for that is the location, isn't it? So We do have people who attend from London and Scotland, but I would say 85% of people are connected to Winchester. So that TEDx community is not only meeting once a year for a conference, an in-person conference, they are connecting at a local social event, or they're going to a cycling event where there's a guest speaker, or they're going to a networking thing in the morning. So they are connecting regularly with each other throughout the whole year, but it's not a TEDx thing. I think there's a lot to be learned from this about how we run that TEDx community.
Exciting.
And I think, you know, you've got to recognise different sectors are at different stages, aren't they? So some of the more academic conferences we do, at the end of the day, they want to talk about what they're doing, and the audience kind of goes to learn and listen. And there's a space for that. But equally, there's other areas where it's far more collaborative. And I think those that experience that, it's like a different level of energy and excitement, and they go, oh, I need to do this in everything now. Yeah. So it's definitely growing and yeah, great to be part of.
I really love the Beamer example in here, actually, because organising events for Beamer, you can't, it's something you do, and then you read it and you go, oh my gosh, we've got all these councils, and everyone is really pleased to be part of a council, and there's a lot of pride in participating in the judging of the awards, and you want to give to that community because you get so much back out from it, and you really feel a value, or I certainly did it being part of it, you feel a value from that community of what you have to say and what you can contribute.
Beamer is a great example of it. Literally is the more you put in, the more you get out. Otherwise, you're just receiving lots of content. But if you get stuck in, then you can get involved in the councils and judging and whatnot.
It's like your National Trust membership. National Trust membership's great, but only if you actually go.
Yeah.
You appreciate it and you enjoy it. Otherwise, it just sits in your wallet and doesn't do anything.
Yeah, nice little car sticker. Fab, so in September, we launched the report, and it was a six-month project to better understand kind of the community profession. The report is available to download at communityleadersurvey.com, where you can download a free copy, or you can buy your own very special printed copy. And they are lovely. They're worth buying a printed copy. So we're going to take a point each and kind of just chat through kind of some of our standout thoughts from the report. And we're going to start with Jan. Jan. Why should events be included in community building strategy?
So my key takeaway from the report, obviously, as an events agency, obviously there's loads of really useful stuff in here, but what we would focus on is the event side of things. The data's really interesting on the event side, but I think Simon's going to talk a little bit about that. But in terms of community strategy, I think people have always done events, and they're often standalone, one-off events, and they have an impact on the day. Everyone learns something, people connect. There may be relationships that come out of it, but it's not a community. Really, events should be threaded through your community strategy, so you already have an established or beginnings of a community that you want to bring together through events. And then if your strategy is, right, we're going to do a one-off annual big event, and then we're going to have a series of webinars, and then we're going to have some social events, people can connect and be with other people in the community and build relationship, then that is much more authentic way of bringing events into your community. I don't know what you think, but in terms of having a big, large event and having a one-off event and then trying to build a community from it, the only one I've seen really successfully is TED. So they have their events every year. They have three large flagship events, and not many of us have been to any of them. But really, the community is built through the YouTube connection and through then TEDx events. But that's the other way around. That wouldn't be my recommendation. My recommendation would be build your event strategy through your community strategy.
Yeah, fun. And then, I mean, I was thinking then of an example of, there's been examples of online communities I've been part of where they used to, pre-pandemic, run really regular in-person events. And they, for me, were a great chance for me to get stuck in the community. And as they scaled back, I actually found community kind of becoming less and less value. And there's a line in here which is, events create really great kind of FOMO moments of actually, oh, that was an event I wish I went to because the rest of the community went. How do you try and kind of create those events that so they create so much value that you feel like you've missed out if you've not gone there? Because we've all sat through events where you're like, well, this was a waste of a day. I shouldn't have scheduled this in my calendar. And there's some events where you're like, I wish I was there. What is the driving force to making sure you're on the right side of that balance?
the key thing, which we all know, is that you cannot replace in-person connection. Mm. We've done really well with webinars and our Zoom conferences, and they've done brilliant things for accessibility and inclusion. And so I would never advocate for going, right, we're not doing anything online, that's a waste of time. It has in person, you know, from just sitting here with us in person, looking us in the eye, smiling at us, connecting with us, you know how much value that brings, much more so than doing it online. Though that's still a quality output, it's just not the same. Mm-hmm. We are hardwired for connection as people. And so when we're in a room together, that brings a different aspect to an event. And I would, that would be the hill I would die on. I would argue that with anybody, that being in person with somebody is more valuable.
The barrier to entry is also higher, which means there are so many... I could be at a webinar every minute of every working day if I wanted to. There's literally countless number of online events I could be attending.
I want to just grab a bit in there, right? Because there's online events and then there's actually online broadcasts.
Sure, yeah.
And most webinars are online broadcasts. Mm-hmm. You sit in your, wherever you are, solo and consume content, pretty much.
It's a Zoom. Yeah. You're basically in a fancy Zoom.
Yeah. To me, that's not really an event, it's a broadcast. And they have their place and they have their value. That's all brilliant and we do them, it's great. But when I think about an online gathering versus a face-to-face gathering, the thing, and you were talking about what sort of stands out, the value, is often it's the side conversations you have with the people sat next to you. It's the conversations you have in the coffee break. It's the experiences you have on the way there, on the way back, or the after, you know, going out for dinner or whatever. It's all that stuff where you're building and deepening relationships. Oh, and the guy who spoke was quite interesting. Mm-hmm. Or the workshop that was led by that woman from whatever organisation was interesting. So the secret to doing online events well is enabling that audience to utilize lots of side channels, enable them to connect and have breakout spaces. So often we use a platform called Hopin, which is now owned by Ring Central. And if you structure the event so you're not just talking at the audience, but you're actually enabling cross conversations and enabling spaces for people to find out, oh, I didn't realize I was there last week, or you know, all those conversations, that's where you go, I'm really glad I went to that, rather than I'm really glad I watched the recording afterwards.
And I guess it's not treating them like second-class citizens. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to take questions from the audience, you need, if you're running a hybrid event, they need to be involved. You can't just be like, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't make it to London, so you don't get to ask a question.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, often we'll use a tool that enables everyone in the room and everyone online to put in their questions and their feedback and their comments that influences what happens on the stage, that therefore means everyone feels that they're valued. Or sometimes you'll have a second host who literally talks to the online audience and intros the next session and, you know, feeds back on, or thanks for, you know, so-and-so for giving us this. And it's all in the planning, but you can only plan based on the vision of either the agency or the client. So you're trying to get people to realise there's much more than just talking at a camera. And if you think that at the beginning, then you can make an experience way better. Yeah. For me, one of the standouts, particularly from the event section, was the fact that people really struggled. I think the largest was 39%, something like that. People struggled with creating online and face-to-face events work. You know, and I've already touched on the sort of planning side of things. But I think having an understanding, and sometimes it's about, you know, go out, speak to people like us and make sense of this world. And because there is a risk, and I think this has happened in the pandemic, of people going, oh, right, yeah, I know how Zoom or Teams or whatever works. Great, we'll just whack it on that. And so, as you said, the bar is so low. Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of talks we've done with people where they're literally sat there in some awful room with a laptop looking
not
up there.
This
not
one.
This
no,
one.
No, 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 yeah. no, this not one. This one. I mean, their background's nowhere near as good as this. I had one person with literally a freshly plastered walls and a light bulb hanging above their head, and the camera's looking up their nose, and I'm thinking, well, you're not having a chat with your teammates. You're literally broadcasting to like 800 people, and you haven't given it any thought. And that's so frustrating, because we do everything we do, send all the information, and people don't read it, you know. But that attention to detail can start to create a much better experience, but you've got to understand what's possible. You've got to understand how to structure it. And then you've got to communicate to that audience, because a lot of us, our expectation is, oh, I'll just click a link and I'll watch whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas if you know there's all these things you can go and do and places you can be part of. I mean, you think about big conferences you've been to face-to-face, like Brighton SEO or those sorts of things.
Yeah, or Web Summit.
Yeah, yeah,
150,000 people.
Yeah, yeah, huge. They've communicated with you, hopefully, in advance, so they've set that expectation. There's all these things you can go to and take part in and go here. And, you know, so you're going with an understanding of the scope and the potential. And that often doesn't happen in events that are online, and yet it can do. So I just think, you know, part of it's about education and understanding what's possible. But if you enable that experience to be good for your online audience, you know, the geographic spread is huge, isn't it? Suddenly you've got a national opportunity or a global opportunity.
Yeah.
You physically just couldn't happen because we wouldn't be able to all fly to the same place.
And it is more green. It is more accessible for many more people. From a technical point of view, Simon, I think we're probably agreed here where a little bit of effort makes a huge amount of change. So just having maybe a slightly better webcam or just a microphone or a light, like you could probably spend £500 or less and make a huge amount of difference ready for you to run a great event. Doesn't have to be like you're at the BBC for it to be good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've seen some of our clients have, over the last few years, you've seen them incrementally get better at it because they've been open to it, they've understood it, and they've invested, whether that's time or also equipment. And those that have just, you know, got through and then got back to what they used to have missed out on that. But, you know, whenever I've had to do media stuff, I've gone, you know, to sat on the red sofa for the BBC or whatever, you know, you go in, you think about what you wear, and then they sort out the microphone, they sort out the lighting, they sort out the backdrop, you know, you sit there and you deliver your content. Now you have to do all of those bits. But if you do it well, and often you only need to do it once, you know, you've invested in some great stuff here, it will pay dividends for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. I mean, with a good hybrid event, as an event agency, we're dealing with all of that, and then speakers need to stand or sit and talk, and we'll make them look good, and we'll make them sound good, because we're controlling all that equipment.
And the last thing I want to mention about the event and working with you on the event was the level of preparation beforehand. We've actually never run, that was our first event we've run together. It was, yeah. And I think so. And the amount of preparation that the speakers had, everybody, every stakeholder had, the venue had, was on like what I would normally do for an event. It would have been hard for a speaker or, you know, one of the expert panelists to turn up and say they were confused about what was happening because they were briefed, they had a document, they knew where to be. They were there early, like there was so much prep, and it felt like that prep just took the pressure off the evening because all of the like quote unquote hard work happened beforehand and everyone knew their roles on the night.
That's absolutely right. And you would know that if you've ever spoken on a panel and you go and you haven't had a briefing or you're not really sure what the questions are or for the format, it's just so unnerving. You can't be your full authentic self and bring your best to that panel. And so we've learned through experience, this is the best way to prepare people. You're going to draw the best out of them, and then the audience and everyone in the room is going to get so much more from them. It's just critical.
Also, they're putting themselves out on a limb because it's an unscripted thing for them. So if they get asked a, you know, a question completely blindsided in front of a live audience, they might not want to answer that question, and you've completely blindsided
That's
them.
That's okay, I know how to handle that now. We'll just deflect away from that and we'll move on to something else.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because I'm sure a lot of people who listen to this, you know, maybe coming from a strategy perspective or from a technology perspective. And obviously there's a whole world to explore there and decisions to make and everything else. But I guess this conversation is saying all of that matters. They're all sort of the building blocks. But at the end of the day, it is about people. It is about getting the best out of people.
Yep.
It's about enabling you to be able to give your best to them. And everyone wins in that scenario. And so I just think it's actually good to think about events as well as community strategy and tech and solutions, and because it brings you back to what we're actually doing here. Why does it matter? It's about people.
Yeah. Fab. So for me, the one of the standout kind of statistics which really surprised me was that 41% of leaders said the challenge for the year coming up was the amount of time they spent on admin. And I get it, because community managers are often generalists. They're the ones who probably set up the tech platform. They have to speak to people who join every day, and they're doing everything end to end, which is why they're so good at being generalists. They're probably writing marketing and everything. But it does feel like it would be very easy for a community manager, the same as a small business owner, to get very much in the weeds when it comes to day-to-day stuff that they never get to kind of come up for air and go, are we going in the right trajectory? And especially when we heard a lot about, especially on the panel, was reporting ROI, kind of return on investment, to the people paying for the event. If you're kind of doing every day, you're doing busy work, and you never get to actually check that what you're doing is measuring up to what your people paying for the community want or the event want, then there's going to be a disconnect there. And then paired with that, which really surprised me, was that 27% of people said they had no documented roadmap of where they were going. So you've got a bunch of people who are doing... So it's nearly a third. So 41% of people said they were doing too much admin, and nearly a third of people said they had no plan on what they were going. And it feels like sometimes maybe as community champions, leaders, whatever you want to call us, we need to take a day off and just kind of, we talked about red days, like almost just take a step back and go, no, today is a day where I just think about the community. I'm not in the community. Yeah. Do you have similar things with events where you're like, actually, I just need to get out of the weeds and kind of be gone?
Yeah, well, you will have it in business, won't you? But yeah, we do have it with events as well, where you have to take a step back, and we always come back and benchmark everything against why. Mm. And it is, why are we doing this? Why are we serving coffee with cake first thing in the morning? Like, why are we doing that? How is that going to impact our delegates? Why are we asking people to go through this particular entrance or come into the event in a certain way? It's all about the purpose, what you're trying to achieve, and going, well, does that serve a purpose at this event? Does that serve a purpose in this community with the strategy that we've got? So if you benchmark it against that, there's loads of stuff you can just chuck out and go, we don't need that.
And then that simplifies things. And with that simplicity comes clarity, doesn't it? You know where you're going, what to invest your time in.
One of the things which I think over the last 3 years I've learned to adjust better with is going from the macro to micro. I might have a day booked out to work on next year's budget or something kind of large like that. And then I get a phone call, which is about a very tiny kind of client query or something. And you're kind of going from big to small, big to small. And I can imagine, you know, if I was running a large active community on Slack or whatever platform, the same thing's going to happen. You're planning out, you know, a new onboarding strategy, and then someone jumps in and they've got like a query that really needs answering. It's going from that, and it's just... that's quite hard to deal with, that macro to micro. For me, what I do is I try to block all my micro things to before and after lunch. Yeah. So I try and block out in 2 hour chunks, because my brain can't do more than 2 hours anyway. So I'll do 2 hours, and then I've got like an hour blocked in, which will just be like admin. And that's just ad hoc stuff that kind of comes in. Yeah. And we really try with our team to encourage them that if you're going to interrupt someone, do it when you know they're already interrupted. So like lunch. So can I grab you after lunch to talk about this? Because I know you've already stopped. But if I say, can I grab you now? Well, you've just interrupted a whole bunch of people.
And do you then do training with people around that and go, this is the best way to work? Or do you go, this is the best way that works for me? Do you empower your team to find what works for them?
We encourage people to do it a way where we don't... no one on our team should expect somebody else on their team to instantly stop something. Everyone should have at least 2 hours warning on a meeting, for instance. Like, if I wanted to call a meeting with the team to talk about the report, it should be far enough in advance that people can block the rest of their day around it. So we try and set standards. Yeah. I think probably could do a better job. But yeah, it's tricky. Especially when you're remote, I think it's trickier because it's so easy to interrupt someone. If we were in an office, I'd have to physically stand up, walk over to them, and people would see me doing it. Where when it's a quick Slack and I've just interrupted someone's deep workflow, it's quite distracting.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Very guilty of that.
But also, some people are more reactionary. Like, that is their kind of mode of operation. So yeah, I think partly it's a personal development thing, and it's understanding that there are various ways you can do things and various ways that might work for you or might not work for someone else. And then hopefully that is a more of an educated choice. But you know, events is an industry that's incredibly stressful, and people can work very... just fighting fires all the time, particularly that like week before an event where everything's starting to ramp up. And yeah, you said it attracts people that like it, which is great, but drama is not good for an event. So it's how do you make it, you know, methodical, creative and fun, but equally, you know, you're actually getting things that's done, which then creates the headspace to be able to focus and deliver on the day or the day before, as opposed to,
What I did find it, so The last TEDx Winchester I came to, I remember saying to Jan, oh, you'll be really busy on the day. And you went, no, my job isn't to run the event on the day. My job is to host, which I found really interesting, actually. And that's quite an interesting way of approaching any kind of big thing like that is I've done my prep. It's now someone else's issue. My job is to do this thing. Whether you're hosting an event or whether it's kind of you're trying to plan out your time, it's actually, no, I've done my thing. That's now somebody else's to worry about. I have to focus on this because it's such a big deal setting the context of the day and the tone that actually you can't be worried about if coffee's just run out. Mm-hmm. That someone else needs. And almost, I don't want to know about it.
And I
someone
find that else really hard, but if you've got good people in your team that you can trust, you just go, it's fine. I know they're going to sort it. It's not an issue. Mm. But your job, and I listened to a podcast about this, which TED, they deliver loads of TEDx podcasts, and they're like, hosts really love to talk about themselves. And so as soon as someone says something, they go, oh, yeah, well, when I was... Because you want to connect with that person and you want to make them feel like, oh, we've had this shared experience. But your job as a host is to introduce the people and get out of the way.
Yeah.
TED literally tell you that. Just get out of the way. It's not your show. Yeah. It's about the idea of the speaker.
I've heard hosts summarise the previous talk, but they got the tone wrong or they just got it wrong. And you're just like, this person just spent 30 minutes delivering something they've crafted.
Yep.
And you've just ruined it in the space of like a minute.
And how often will you come out of a conference session and you'll chat to someone and you go, oh, wasn't it great when they said this about this? They're like, oh, no, no, but I really love... You always find something different and you always... You'll find that whoever's watched that, you can watch an identical talk and you can come out with different outcomes.
Mm. Great. I really appreciate you both being involved in producing the report and the event that we ran last week. Is there anything else you want to add about the report?
I sort of off the back of the report, I suppose, the thing for me is I'm really interested in the whole thing around values and how there are organisations that have, they stand for values.
Mm.
And so their appeal is not just the product they sell or the service they sell. It's I'm involved in that. Or I care about that because I care about the bigger issue. So things like, you know, ecology brands, you know, sustainability initiatives and also there's charities and things as well. But often there's companies that are selling a product, but there's a lifestyle and a value fit.
Patagonia would be a great example.
That everyone knows. Yeah, absolutely. So you've got an organisation that stands for more than just T-shirts and, you know, apparel. It's actually, I align myself with that.
Yeah. I want people to know that I'm a Patagonia person, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So this is a big brand, you know, area. And yet, I think the community and the online community shift is going to really benefit organisations that stand for something bigger than themselves.
Mm.
Because, yes, I'm a customer, or I might buy more stuff from you, and, you know, that's the marketing side of things, I guess. But actually, I want to join that community because I identify with it.
Mm.
I'm part of it. Actually, I also care about all the other side issues or the wider issues that are part of this. I want to fundraise for a charity you're partnering with. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go to an event. I want to sign a petition. Yeah, and I'll buy your T-shirt. And I think that space is super exciting. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about all those things that I care about. And we know that younger people, when Gen Z or whatever,
Gen Z,
you know, the data is telling us they want to spend their time and their money and their employment with organisations
that they align with
and they care about. So value fit is critical. And actually, I think the brands that only care about flogging you more stuff and making more profit are going to struggle to the community well. And the ones that stand for something are going to do really well. How exciting.
There's a shoe brand called Hilo, and they make recycled shoes out of corn. It's amazing, and they do an incredible job. But the reason I know about them is because of the community they built around it. So they've got quite a large Instagram following, and it feels like all of their content has, since they've grown their community, it's now switched. It's community-led.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, this community of London Hilo shoe owners went on a run, or they did a charity run or whatever it was, and that's what their content's become. It's become very community-led.
Yeah.
And it's almost like...
It's a movement.
I want to spend £110 on shoes because I kind of want to be in that club.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I want to be aligned with actually I'm picking that over the easy shoe choice, which would be something made on the far flungs of the earth. Thank you for coming in to chat about the report. Thank you for being involved in it. And I really appreciate that. If people want to find out more about Autumn Live and what you're up to, where's the best place to find you online?
So connecting with us on LinkedIn, which we're very active in, but also our website, autumnlive.co.uk, and then following us through socials.
Fantastic. Thank you. Really appreciate your time. See you soon. Thank you.